Hi, I'm Chrissy.
I'm Joss, and you're listening to Breaking the Curtain,
the podcast where we interview our theater idols and chat all about the history behind your favorite musicals.
So sit back,
relax,
and enjoy the episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Breaking the Curtain. If it's your first time, hello, I'm Chris.
I'm Joss.
And we are so glad you decided to spend some time out of your day to listen to us chat all about the 2023-2024 Broadway season. Oh my God, saying that out loud, I can't believe we are actually about to enter another award season.
Truly. It feels like just yesterday we were talking with Taylor Williams and Tom Kitt about their Tony nominations.
Yes. Not only that, I feel like we are waiting to see if Aaron DeVate will bring home the 2021 Tony Award. Time really does fly, friends. It flies.
Genuinely. So do you think Aaron DeVate will take home the Tony Award this year?
Oh, it's up in the air. It's really up in the air. We will have to wait and see what happens with that. No, friends, Aaron DeVate is not eligible for Sweeney Todd. If you were wondering, we do know our shit.
We do know. But if you know us, you know that I will take any opportunity to bring Aaron DeVate into the conversation.
We need to poke some fun with you all.
Yeah.
So I was trying to figure out what is the best way to jump into this conversation. I'm thinking we just go through the list of musicals currently running or will be running soon on Broadway this season. What do you think?
That's a big list.
It's a big list. I drank coffee this morning. I prepared. So, all right, so I think I'm okay. I'm going to be okay.
I didn't have coffee, so I'm going to let you hit this.
Oh, I got you. I got you. Okay, here we go. Here's the list. Back to the Future, Cabaret, Days of Wine and Roses, Gutenberg, Harmony, Hell's Kitchen, Here Lies Love, How to Dance in Ohio, Illinois, Limpika, Merrily We Roll Along, Once Upon a One More Time, Suffs, The Great Gatsby, The Heart of Rock and Roll, The Notebook, The Outsiders, Water for Elephants, and The Who's Tommy. I did it.
Phew, take a bow, girlfriend.
God, it's not me reading these for the Tony Awards. Thank God.
It would be another La La Land Moonlight situation if we had to read out the names. Like, remember when that happened at the Oscars?
Oh God. Yes. They made a reference to it at the Oscars this year because Emma Stone won Best Actress.
But holy Moses, that is a stacked season, y'all. I don't think we've seen one that big in a couple years, actually.
No. No, we have not. Now, I don't know about you, but when I think of Back to the Future, I immediately think of Huey Lewis and the News. So I am a little bit surprised that we have Back to the Future and The Heart of Rock and Roll in the same season. Not that they're like anything alike. And I believe Back to the Future only has two Huey Lewis songs.
Yeah.
But it kind of reminds me of like Anne Juliet and Once Upon a One More Time sharing Hit Me Baby One More Time. When we weren't sure last year if it was opening last season ahead of the awards, which would have put both of those musicals in the same season. All this to say, spread the power of love, baby. Why not have Back to the Future and The Heart of Rock and Roll in the same season?
But do you think they'd both perform The Power of Love at the Tony Awards if they both had a performance slot?
God, I hope so. No, I do think Back to the Future would probably perform The Power of Love in some sort of medley with It Works.
Yeah.
Personally, I would love to see them also perform Johnny Be Good on the Tony Awards, but I don't think that will happen. The Heart of Rock and Roll will probably do the bubble wrap choreography that we've been seeing on TikTok because it's just so iconic and different.
And we are both Rock of Ages girlies, so we are very excited to see comes out of The Heart of Rock and Roll, especially the bubble wrap tap. I haven't been this excited about choreography in a long time, and honestly, I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah, no, it is. It's very cool and a bit terrifying. I'm curious how it, like, doesn't slide underneath them.
I'm thinking it's not real bubble wrap because that would be super wasteful. You know what I mean?
I saw a lot of people saying that on TikTok as well, but I do think the bubble wrap is real.
I wonder if for the Meet the Press piece, they did use real bubble wrap. Maybe. Just because the cameras are so close. But I think there has to be some sort of theater magic to it. Like maybe the sounds are pre-recorded. And if it's actual bubble wrap, oh my goodness, tap shoes are slippery enough on their own. Good luck.
They could probably like find a way to make merchandise out of it or give it to scenery bags and they'll do something cool with with the bubble wrap. Or I don't know. I think it could be really cool. and it would fight being wasteful if they were
just like
able
kick
to.
It into the front row and I'll be sitting there popping it the whole rest of the show.
Like Newsies when they pop the
Yeah, Tommy Bracco knows what to do. You just put him on it. He'll just kick it into the audience and strike.
Oh, yes. I'm very excited to learn more. It really is giving Rock of Ages vibes at first glance.
I mean, the music rocks and you have Corey Cott and Mackenzie Kurtz leading the company. So yeah. What more could you ask for?
Yeah, I mean, I am curious to see how it will hold in terms of like, since we are comparing it to Rock of Ages, which wasn't based on the music of just one artist and instead featured like the music of multiple 80s artists. However, I can see this musical gathering a huge fan base because who doesn't love Huey Lewis?
I think there's a lot about it that does attract younger people, but I also know that they have the older people secured, as in like seats.
Yeah.
I think
like
if
Neil
you're
Diamond.
Of a certain age. Yeah, it's like Neil Diamond. They had the fan base to fill seats in the bag before they even opened.
Oh, absolutely. Because like the people in our age demographic are not going to see the Neil Diamond musical as much, from what I've gathered. I think they would go see The Heart of Rock and Roll.
I feel like it has a lot in terms of the colors and the set that would attract to people our age. Moving on, we have a lot of book to movie to musical adaptations this season.
Yeah.
Say that three times fast, which I think is really interesting because so many have the same pathway. Like we have The Great Gatsby, The Notebook, The Outsiders, Water for Elephants. And how cool is that? They also all look really, really amazing.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time we've had a season with this many book to musical adaptations. It's in general a pretty diverse season in terms of different categories. We have jukebox musicals, we have original musicals, book and movie to stage adaptations. I'll tell you straight up, though, if we are chatting about the score from these adaptations, The Notebook and The Outsiders have my heart.
Honestly, those two have really great scores. I love what we've heard so far from them. And considering it's Ingrid Michaelson and Jamestown Revival, who are kind of more popular artists than theater-based artists, it is incredible how songs like, gosh, what was the one I was just listening to? Ryan Vasquez.
Oh. Leave
What's
the light
name
on?
Of it? Yeah, I was just listening to Leave the Light On, and I was listening to Stay Gold, and just how beautiful these songs sound. Like, they sound like they're from a Broadway score. So when you have someone who can take pop music and come in and write a Broadway score, I'm always just, like, genuinely amazed because it's impressive. Yeah.
And yet, they also feel like standalones where I could drive down the street if I could drive. I don't drive, everyone. I'm scared of driving. But if I could drive, I could picture myself putting on Stay Gold and it would sound like something on the radio.
See, I could not listen to Stay Gold while driving because I would be crying so
the
hard
tears.
I'd crash. I
oh,
would
yes.
genuinely, like, it would be rough. But
it's gorgeous.
Also, you know, Water for Elephants, I was just listening to Wild. That is an incredible song. Izzy McCalla sounds fantastic on
yes.
it. What was the last one? The Great Gatsby? Mm-hmm. My Green Light? Oh my lord, that is beautiful. It is stunning. So we have some really beautiful scores. And yeah, people like to be kind of like, oh, well, it's not an original musical because it's based on something. But these four shows look so strong and are just incredibly beautiful across the board. And I'm really, really excited for people to see them and to hear more about them because, like, these are stories we love.
Yeah, and I would dare say that listening to a bunch of these songs, I'll go back to The Notebook and The Outsiders just because I've listened to those the most from the singles they've released. I can't really find any other musicals that I've been able to compare the scores to.
Yeah, I think especially The Outsiders, it has a very unique
It's very,
sound.
Like, folk. Like an indie sound, it's beautiful.
It's beautiful, but I'm kind of hoping to hear, as we hear more from it, to kind of get something that's like slightly grittier and maybe something that sounds just a little slightly more Broadway, whatever that means, honestly. I think the score is gorgeous, but I really am interested to kind of see how they can push the boundaries of that folkiness. To bring in just a little bit more variety.
Yeah, you know what? I find that something I so disagree with. Only because, like you said, what is Broadway? And I totally agree that Broadway has taken on a whole new sound in the last, I don't know, 25, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I like that we are moving into these folk-sounding musicals. Like, we've seen a bit with Hadestown has that kind of, like, undergroundish sound.
Hadestown is beautiful. That jazzy blues score.
Oh, so gorgeous.
But there are moments of it that are very Broadway
musical theater, yes.
Musically, you know? Absolutely. And I think that's kind of maybe what I'm looking for. I want something like just slightly more musical theater-y. Not by much, maybe just like 3%. 3% more.
We get a nice mix of that in The Notebook.
Mm-hmm.
That one has a more Broadway sound. But for the outsiders, by making the show have this more like radio style sound where it's like driving down the country road, like it's chill.
When have you ever driven down the country road?
Literally never, but I picture myself living that life, Jocelyn. Gosh.
When you come visit me, I'll drive you down a country road and you'll go, this is the most boring thing I've ever done in my life.
As long as you play Stay Gold, I think we are good. We're solid, okay?
We only play happy songs while I'm driving.
That is a happy song in my heart because it's very well done. Okay, but like I was saying, I think it's a very good marketing thing going on right now with this show. And I think having this gorgeous, talented cast with these songs, I think that's going to bring in a new audience.
Stay Gold is stunning. It is so beautiful, and I can see the characters in my head, and it takes me back to reading the book the first time when you read the letter that Johnny has left for Ponyboy, and it just, whew.
And you know, this is something we talked about last year for last Tony season when we discussed the almost famous cast recording. I love that The Outsiders has dialogue in it. And that was something I wanted from Almost Famous for their cast album, because they did not include Penny Lane, not Penny Lane's dialogue, but the men talking about Penny Lane and the humble pie and the $50 and the case of beer in the middle of the wind is what sold me in that show. I was like, this is a smart way to incorporate that scene with this song in that moment. And I wanted that in the cast album. So I'm happy that The Outsiders are incorporating script into into the middle of their song.
Yeah. It's just very, very Broadway, isn't it? You're singing along to a song and all of a sudden there's dialogue. They're all just great. They're all great, great options.
So talented. Oh my God.
And like, they got me rereading. Like, I started rereading Gatsby over the weekend. I've got my copy of The Outsiders out, and like, I don't know. It's just a great time to be a person who loves books and Broadway.
I'm very curious about The Great Gatsby because I feel like there's been such big conversation about the two Gatsbys. Obviously, one is not going to Broadway this season. And I forget, I think that one that is not coming, the Florence, that's the one that people favor, if I'm not mistaken.
That's what I heard, but I also feel like everybody who saw Gatsby at Paper Mill, like The Great Gatsby is what's on Broadway right now. Gatsby is the Florence one. So that's like the slight difference. Gatsby's public domain right now. So like anybody can do whatever they want with it. So you are going to see multiple Gatsbys. Personally, I would be more than happy to buy a ticket to both and see both.
I think I know some of the cast for Gatsby, so I'm very excited about that. I think that's going to be great, too, although that's not on Broadway this season.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be like great.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be like Gatsby great.
The Great Gatsby?
Like the Great Gatsby.
Gatsby? What Gatsby? The Great Gatsby.
The great one. But yes, it will be very good. Talking about the Gatsby on Broadway now, or that's coming to Broadway at the time that we are recording this. I'm not a Gatsby girly, so I'm speaking freely. What I think about this generation of people loving Gatsby or knowing Gatsby, besides the book, I think they all think the Leonardo DiCaprio film. And this isn't that. So I'm very curious what the reviews will be like, but not even reviews from critics, from people in our age demographic, what their thoughts will be, if they're going to be like, oh, I kind of want it, that luscious, big, Great Gatsby movie-esque type of thing, which this is.
Well, the movie was also Baz Luhrmann.
Of course.
So it was that Baz Luhrmann level of over the top, which while it does grant itself to the excess of the 1920s, I felt like that was, I loved that movie with Leo in it, but I felt like it focused more on the themes than the actual character interactions. So it focused more on the excess of the 1920s and the pursuit of the American dream, and that the American dream is empty and blah, blah, blah. That's for another day. That's a different podcast. But I felt like the connections between the characters weren't necessarily there. Like, I didn't find a lot of connection between Gatsby and Daisy. But then you look at the stuff that's coming out with this musical and the chemistry between Eva and Jeremy. I'm like, all right.
Oh, I mean, it's going to be amazing. But yeah, I'm in a way, I'm glad that it's not like Baz Luhrmann-y. Only because, like, yeah, we do have Moulin Rouge. We don't really need that over the top, like.
And again, I think when you go with over the top, and it works for Moulin Rouge,
it does.
But with something like Gatsby, when you go with the over the top and the spectacle of theater, which we are always so excited to run with, when we focus too much on that, we lose what's actually going on between the humans.
Absolutely.
And that's what's most important. And the thing about Gatsby, as much as it's about, yeah, success and blah, 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 and every single character in Gatsby is a terrible person except Gatsby. Like, that's the point. But you miss out on the connections between the characters if you focus on spectacle. And so, I don't know. I'm excited. I'm excited either way. Give me more Gatsby. So this season, we also have some bio musicals or bio adjacent musicals. I say bio adjacent because we don't really have a lot of info on these shows yet.
Right.
But we have Hell's Kitchen, which is Alicia Keys, and we have Limpika. And again, I don't know much about either show, but we did just see clips from Limpika, and I am so intrigued. I am so excited by this. That video of Eden Espinosa going around singing Woman Is, oh my Lord. She's just a stunning, stunning talent. I'm so glad she's back on Broadway.
I agree, and I cannot tell you how excited I am for Hell's Kitchen, and also how devastated I am that they don't include Try Sleeping with a Broken Heart in the show, because it's my favorite Alicia Keys song. Nonetheless, very much looking forward to that show, and I cannot wait for it to start previews very soon.
Yeah, and I feel like there are so many shows that are coming that we're just kind of waiting to see more from. And I'm really excited to wait for them.
And it's really nice to see how involved Alicia Keys has been through this entire process. I mean, she was out there on the bus when they had their ticket sale day. I was like, this is insane. Like, I would have cried if we were able to be there and just see Alicia Keys waving from the bus. I would have actually probably peed myself in the middle of Times Square.
And I do think it's incredible in the sense that you don't always see that with these jukebox bio musicals.
Yeah.
You don't always see, like, you think of Carole King. She came to one rehearsal and then she didn't see the show.
Right.
You know, she kind of gave them permission to do what they were doing. But she waited to see the actual show. But then you have someone like, I think Gloria and Emilio Estefan are a great example. They have been involved since day one. And so to see Alicia Keys, like, in it to win it with Hell's Kitchen, I think it's really fun and refreshing and makes me even more excited. And it gives the audience a sense of trust in the material because you know that she is heavily involved. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
We are also stacked with revivals this season.
Oh, yes,
oh my goodness. We have Tommy, Cabaret, Gutenberg, Merrily, and all of these look fantastic. And something I always look for in a revival is, does it elevate the original production? And so far, it looks like all of these do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Merrily is a famous flop, and this revival has broken even, has huge positive response. Cabaret did wonderfully in the UK. Gutenberg was doing really well, and Tommy just looks fantastic.
I agree. I question how much Merrily We Roll Along breaking records is based on just the cast being incredible and some of them being A-list. You know, like, it's an incredible show and people love to see a flop return to the stage, and better yet, love to see a flop succeed and do better than its original run, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you add Daniel Radcliffe and Jonathan Groff and Lindsay Mendez into the show and upcharge the tickets, it's going to break records, I think. Like, I love the production, by the way. I'm not surprised that it has done very well.
Yeah. And you know what? Merrily is a cult classic to theater goers because it's always been good, just it wasn't what people were looking for at that time on Broadway, which I think is why it flopped. And I think it's an incredible show and it has an incredible cast, but I agree. I think the crazy expensive tickets were a big part of recouping so fast, which I know we would all spend a lot of money to see certain shows and artists, but I honestly think that no theater ticket should be more than $200. And even then, that is like get spit on by Jonathan Groff money.
I've been spat on by Jonathan Groff for $75.
Listen, I live in Canada and I think I get spat on by Jonathan Groff every time he sings
something. When it's raining outside.
It's when it rains, it's Jonathan Groff's spit. Jonathan, oh my God, he's never going to come on the podcast now.
Please, Jonathan Groff, you have no clue how much I love you. Like, you are my favorite human ever.
It's like in the first line of her bio on the podcast was spat on by Jonathan Groff once.
Oh my good God.
But speaking of expensive revivals, Cabaret is finally coming to Broadway with its new look. And this looks incredible. I would love to see this. But honestly, who can afford a ticket when the cheapest seat is like $139? Like, are you kidding?
And isn't that sad when you said it's $139, right? The cheapest seat. And in my head, I'm like, that's not horrible because we're so conditioned to think like ticket prices are like $250 and up at regular at best. Mm-hmm. To me, I'm like, oh, $139? What a steal.
Yeah, but $139 should be an orchestra seat, not a nosebleed.
I agree.
Yeah.
Theater is just, yeah, it's crazy expensive. And I think it's okay to admit that Broadway pricing is expensive. I find it crazy how, like, it's minimalistic shows that are often the most expensive, like Merrily and, like, Cabaret. Not that they're minimalistic in, like, the sense of, oh, these are really great shows and Cabaret is, like, a grand show. But, like, it doesn't have a big set. You know what I mean? It's not like it's raining, like, in The Notebook.
I just think ultimately you limit your audience by having high ticket prices.
Oh, absolutely you do. Which is another thing that I've seen people disagree with on social media. The way I think of it is possibly not the correct way, but here's how I view it. You know, like the rich businessman might spend $600 on a premium ticket and see it only once, and probably only see it because it's hard to come by. And that's what brings in a lot of people wanting to see some of these specific shows like Merrily that was sold out for quite a while. Mm-hmm. But then there's also like the fangirl spending $30 to $45 on a Rush ticket and going repeatedly to see the same show. And that is helping keep it afloat in the sense that you have a lot of these returning audience members and they're talking about it online. And what sells better these days than word of mouth and influencers?
Exactly. And I know that you're paying for quality and that Broadway is an expensive business. People need to recoup, people need to get paid, all of that. But I think having ticket prices under $100 that aren't lottery or raffle is best practice. I mean, we're in a cost of living crisis. Let's be real. All of this aside, Cabaret in the club setting and in the round really does seem like an incredible way to experience it. It's one of my favorite musicals, and I love everything I've seen of this revival online. And since we're talking awards season, I can see it being a frontrunner simply with how it fared in the UK.
Yeah, I so agree. I so agree. I was surprised that we were getting a revival like only 10 years since the last revival. Mm-hmm. Because that one was also incredible and it kind of felt in the similar vein to what they are bringing in now. Mm-hmm. Although I know this is much more elevated and all that. That being said, I think we had that club setting at the, was it Studio 54 where they had Cabaret with Emma Stone?
I think so, but I genuinely can't remember. No, that was a long time ago, Chrissy.
Not that long. I think it was 2014, wasn't it? Maybe. But yeah, I know I would never spend $139 on Cabaret, let alone any ticket on Broadway. Ticketing prices are crazy, despite all of these shows looking incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I really, really want to bring us back to The Notebook because I've genuinely not been this excited about a musical in years. Actually, to prepare for this season and upcoming interviews, wink. I made Jocelyn watch The Notebook with me, and it was her very first time watching it.
I have avoided watching The Notebook for 26 years, and I should have. I still haven't recovered from it, and it's been a week. And it was really good. It was incredibly well written, mm-hmm. but I cried so hard that I'm good at the moment. I do not need to see it. I am fine. I don't think I need to ever see that again. But that being said, the musical does look like a fantastic adaptation from what I saw in the movie. And I think it really lends itself to stage well.
Yeah, I find it so funny when people are like, The Notebook is so sad. And I'm like, yeah, it is very sad. But also, how beautiful to live your life with someone like that. Like, spoiler alert. Yeah, they die at the end together. And I think that is the best possible way to go, is with the one you love. So I don't know. Well, I do find it incredibly sad, and I literally sob every single time I watch the movie. I'm also like, okay, wow, like, to be loved like that is a beautiful thing. So that's what I take away from it. But I do understand why people are like, I can't watch that more than once. I get it. I do understand.
I'm still going to need like 3 to 5 business days to recover.
All right. Well,
yeah,
we'll watch it again.
No.
In 3 to 5
business no. days. No, I'm not. I'm good. I've seen it once. You can leave me alone.
Oh, gosh. Well, back to the musical. From everything I've heard, it has some changes. Why are you laughing at me?
I was just emotionally exhausted by The Notebook.
Oh, my God. What was I even saying?
It has about the changes.
Yes. So it has some changes from the book and movie. And you know what? I really appreciate that. I like when an adaptation makes changes to the origin material and isn't a direct copy. Now, obviously, I don't know every single thing because I've not seen it live yet. But from my understanding, it takes place in a different time period. So it's like, instead of the 30s, it's now starting in the 50s. For young Noah and young Allie. I could be wrong.
Wait, isn't that where it started last time?
No, it starts in the 30s through the 40s.
Oh, so they're like super old. Okay.
Yeah. But then you have to remember, like, the movie itself was done in 2004. So, like, they're staying in that time period of it still being 2004 for the old people.
Ah, I imagine. Okay. I won't lie. I wasn't really paying attention to timelines. I was just trying to survive. I've blocked a lot of it out now.
Well, basically, okay, so yeah. So the time period has a little bit of a change, but I'm okay with that. I wasn't sure at first. I was like, oh, I really like that, like, 1930s, 1940s-esque aspect of it. But still works. And Joy looks amazing in her 70s outfits. I love the denim jeans. So I am so here for it. I'm here for it.
Joy Woods is a real-life Disney princess.
Oh, my God.
I just think she's so stunning, and just her voice and her mannerism.
Yes. And, oh, my God, her opening night look.
Oh, my God, gorgeous.
I gasped. When I saw the photo, I was like, oh, my God. No, like, stunning. Stunning. Mm-hmm. And Jordan, too. Like, both looked incredible. Just so beautiful. So beautiful.
Another show that has gathered quite a fan base already is Suffs.
Yes. I listened to a few of the released songs, and I am loving all of it. It kind of gives me, like, the bridge between Hamilton and Six a little bit.
Well, I mean, it's about the women's suffrage movement, which I think is a really cool thing to have a musical about. I'll be honest, I haven't really listened to any of the tunes from it, but looking forward to hearing more. Now, we put out some prompts for our listeners to answer over on Instagram, so thank you for answering our questions about this season. We are going to jump into those questions and read the responses and our own.
Alrighty, so we asked, what is the show you are most excited about this season? And TheaterNerd98 answered, The Outsiders, and Hearts for Juliet answered, Merrily. And yes, yes to both.
Now, this is a hard one because there are so many to be excited about this season. I try to frame my choices as, like, if I had the money for 2 tickets, what would I be seeing? Revival-wise, it's Tommy. That's an easy choice for me. But as for new shows, it's a little harder, but likely The Outsiders. I'm invested in it in a way I haven't been in a new show for a really long time.
Yeah, for me, it's The Notebook and The Outsiders.
Which show do you think will be the award season frontrunner? Theater Nerd 98 says Limpika and Hearts for Juliet says Merrily.
I'm hoping the front runner will be The Notebook, but I think it could go a lot of different ways and probably will be Limpika.
You know, it's going to be a very competitive season, so it could swing either way. We have a lot of contenders for Best Revival, which you don't always get to see. And as for the new shows, there are so many different ones. I think it really depends on what voters value. I do think looking simply at what is available so far, you have so many shows pushing the limits of what is possible on stage in terms of design, like The DeLorean in Back to the Future, The Rain in The Notebook, The Mud in The Outsiders, Acrobatics in Water for Elephants. I think the design categories will be an interesting one to watch. I know the question was for frontrunner, but with so many different shows, it's a little too early to say. I do have this like feeling that Limpika might sweep, but I haven't really seen enough to truly like comment on that and make that assumption based in fact. It's just a gut feeling.
Yeah. I wonder how Back to the Future will fare when it reaches the award season. I have really high hopes, and I'm sure it will receive a good amount of awards. But looking back at when it opened, I really thought, you know, it would be the front runner despite knowing the shows that were coming in. And now that there has been so many incredible musicals that have done even better and look so much better than what I anticipated them to be like, I think this season will have a lot of overshadowing because everything is just so, so different.
Mm-hmm. You know, I always feel bad for shows that close months away from awards season or open very early into the season, just because not everyone gets a chance to see them, and sometimes they're overlooked. And it isn't really for any reason of being good or not. It's simply out of sight, out of mind. And I mean, Days of Wine and Roses looked fantastic. Here Lives Love and Once Upon a One More Time had great fan responses. Harmony looked really neat. But I think because of when they opened and closed, it's just really crappy timing when it comes to getting recognition, when it comes to Tony nominations.
Yeah, so standout performances of the 2023-2024 season. Theater Nerd 98 said Liam Pierce, Joy Woods, and Emma Pittman. And Hearts for Juliet said Lindsay Mendez, but also Katie Rose Clark equally. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I love everyone on this list.
Me too. I have to say my standout so far is Sky Lakota Lynch from The Outsiders.
Obviously, we haven't seen these shows, but I definitely think that Aiden Espinosa will be receiving a nod for Limpika. I can definitely see her being a frontrunner for Best Actress in a Musical. As well as Sky Lakota Lynch for The Outsiders is another standout I've been thinking of. Malia Joy Moon is someone I also think will get a nomination for Ally in Hell's Kitchen. And I also think Jeremy Jordan, as I said, is the perfect Broadway Gatsby. And I love what we've seen of him in clips recently.
Yeah, agreed. Haven't seen them live or much in general besides like the preview clips and such. But based on everything I've seen as a whole, Sky Lakota Lynch for me, I'd also say Marianne Plunkett from The Notebook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thoughts you'd like to share about the 2023-2024 season? Theater Nerd 98 says it's so crowded, so the season doesn't feel as competitive.
Yeah, you know, I agree in a way. I hadn't thought about it this way, so thank you, Hannah. That's a really great observation, actually.
And Hearts for Juliet says Merrily better get their overdue recognition. You know what? Amen.
Yes.
I think my first thought when it comes to this season is good luck to the people making the decisions because there's so much wonderful art happening on stage to be celebrated. We're so lucky.
And shout out to the marketing teams because they are doing such a wonderful job of promoting all of these shows. I have to admit, I have not been this excited for a season since like 2013, and that's 11 years now, baby. Oof. So I can understand, too, why people are upset that the season might feel overly stacked. And yes, in a way it does. But you also have to account for the amount of musicals that were looking for a home since early 2020 and are now moved into a theater after waiting all this time. So the more the merrier, or the more the merrier.
Stop it. You know, I am just so excited to hear more about the upcoming shows, the ones that haven't opened yet and the ones that are open. And Chrissy's right, it is such an exciting season, and I'm genuinely waiting for updates on these new shows in a way I haven't in a while. And I'm just super thrilled for the theater community and everyone involved. It truly feels like we are completely back when it comes to Broadway, in the sense that we have such a full list of new shows that have opened. I think that is something we've been missing in the last few years.
Exactly. Yeah, we are back. Broadway has been back for a while. It's nice to see these shows that had out-of-town runs in 2019 and 2020 finally making it to Broadway. So yeah, I guess we'll know more in May when they announce the nominations.
Yeah, in May we'll touch base about nominations, and stick around because we may or may not have an interview coming up with someone who is currently in one of these exciting shows.
Yes, very exciting.
And hopefully the world keeps ticking that way and we'll be able to bring you an inside look on what is going on Broadway this season. I'm just so excited to celebrate all the love, not just the new shows, the ones that have been there forever too.
Oh,
it's
yes.
It's a great time to love theater, and I just love seeing everybody talking about theater nonstop. Like, I love how excited the community is. We're all buzzing.
So yeah, if you enjoyed this episode, stick around. We will have more about this season coming up very soon.
Buzz buzz, guys.
Buzz buzz. What the heck?
Well, because we're buzzing.
Bye, everyone. Thank you for listening.
Buzz buzz, baby.